after a week off last week due to unforeseen circumstances, we're back!
Well, we might be back, but I've been banned from standing in the next election in Hutton Space.
I've been banned from voting.
I've been in a band, if that helps.
I've got a rubber band.
Okay, we've all been at the Centauri Megagen again. I have no idea what just happened. A bit like the news. Hopefully these headlines will help.
The inaugural Hutton Orbital Association Suckball Championship. A zero-G game like no other.
Community goals return after prolonged publisher strike ends. The inside story.
Too hot, too messy, rumbles along, slowly.
Felicity Farseer's farcical frameshift fiasco.
Hutton Space, an utter mess as usual.
They say that in space, no one can hear you cheer, or scream, or wave your rattle in support of your favourite team. But inside the station, it's an entirely different matter. This week saw the start of the Galactic Suckball League, a sport invented at Hutton, and as far as we can tell, only ever played in stations owned by Hutton. Okay, no one has ever heard of it. Where there's a league and a cup and a galactic cup. For those not familiar with Association Suckball, it might be that you're one of the Merkin people from the night shift, and you possibly know it instead as Suction Soccer. To differentiate it from American Suckball, which is an entirely different sport, or Aussie Rules Suckball, which is basically, as with most Australian ball sports, a legalised fight. In the zero-g environment of the typical space orbital, which, unlike full stations, doesn't rotate, doesn't stick people to the floor using said rotation, and can't approximate gravity of any sorts, it's difficult to play ball games that involve anything other than twatting a ball really hard and seeing it careen off the far wall. Squash, for instance, works really well in zero-g. There is an element of society, though, that prefers the kind of sport where you have to maintain control of the ball without just smacking it with something, or holding it. Zero-G rugby is a perfect example of a sport that has translated well to space environments. Hence, the invention of suckball. In reality, it ought to be called suck and blow ball, but someone thought it was a naughty name, so they made it only half as naughty by losing the blowing bit. So, what is suckball? Players fitted with suction cup boots, Velcro covered gloves, magnetic suits, and a backpack with a long hose ending in a handle attempt to manipulate a specially reactive ball inside a spherical arena and score goals. The goals bit is probably the only bit that resembles football, really. The walls of the arena are dotted with metallic sections, Velcro covered strips, and smooth sections, giving your average player a range of choices as how to stick in place. The backpacks? Players are equipped with specially designed handheld devices, colloquially known as blowers and suckers. These devices can either emit a powerful blast of air to propel the ball forward, or create a vacuum to catch and hold the ball momentarily. The added control over the ball's movement has made the game more dynamic and strategic. With the ability to directly influence the ball's trajectory, players have developed innovative tactics. Teams now have specialised roles, with some players focusing on offensive blows to launch the ball towards the goal, whilst others specialise in defensive sucks to intercept and capture the ball in mid-air. Similar to traditional soccer, the objective is to score goals by getting the ball into the opposing team's net. However, there's a twist. Goals can be scored from any direction, as the nets are three-dimensional cubes suspended in the middle of the arena. Players must navigate the arena's obstacles using their suction or blowing gear, Sucker boots, magnetic body armour and Velcro gloves to propel themselves and pass the ball. So simpler than cricket then. The inaugural tournament saw teams from various systems competing in a series of matches that tested not only their athletic skills, but also their ability to adapt to the three-dimensional play space. Spectators were treated to a dazzling array of acrobatics and strategy as players bounced off surfaces, executed stunning mid-air manoeuvres and formed human chains to block or redirect the ball. One of the highlights was a match where the underdog team, the Orbital Ocelots, performed a daring move known as the Suck Ball Spiral, where players formed a spinning chain, passing the ball along the spiral to score a goal from an impossible angle. Another unforgettable moment was the great save by goalie Sticky Fingers McGraw, who used his suction cups to adhere to a corner of the goal cube, stretching to block a seemingly certain goal. The matches were full of memorable plays, like the vacuum volley, where a team passed the ball using only the suck function, creating a mesmerizing floating effect. Another was the Gale goal, a powerful long-distance blow that sent the ball hurtling into the net from halfway across the arena. The championship concluded with a dramatic final, with the Orbital Ocelots narrowly defeating the Gravity Gliders in a penalty shootout. In a gripping finale, the Ocelots and the Gliders were neck and neck until the final moments. The goal that drew the teams level in the final minutes was a spectacular combination, following a suck-off on the halfway line due to professional foul by one of the gliders, and well-timed suck to intercept, followed by a rapid blow, sending the ball into the goal in a stunning display of skill, teamwork and innuendo. The event was hailed as a huge success, not just for its entertainment value, but also for showcasing the adaptability and ingenuity of humans, and possibly other species, living and working in space. As Commander Twinkletoes Johnson, captain of the winning team, said in a post-match interview, "Suckball isn't just a game. It's a celebration of life in space. It's about adapting, innovating, and having a blast whilst doing it."
News channels are abuzz this week as the Long Miss Community Goals, CGs to those in the know, made a triumphant return to the galaxy. This revival comes after months of absence, the result of what insiders are calling the Great Publisher Strike of 3309. Mimicking events of the various 21st century film and TV writers' strikes, publishers and coordinators of Community Goals, the CG Publishers Union, known as Galactic Goals Guild or 3G, decided to down tools. Their grievances? Lack of creative freedom, compensation issues, and frankly, too many commanders just blowing things up for a quick buck, revealed an anonymous source. The strike led to a CG drought, leaving pilots longing for the good old days of collaborative galactic missions. The speculative CGs that never were, during the strike, rumours swirled about potential community goals that never saw the light of day. These included the Great Galactic Bake Off, a competition to create the most delicious zero-G cake, judged by a panel of esteemed space chefs. Pilots were expected to bring the required foodstuffs and some processors to Baker Analysis Center in Kojak, who loves you, baby. Rewards included being allowed to lick the beater, and for those in the top tier, having it turned off first. Operation Find Commander Flossie's Pan, a galaxy-wide hunt for the lost kitchen utensil, rumoured to be the key to peace among warring factions. Asteroid Base Interior Decoration. Pilots were to gather rare materials for the ultimate makeover of a drab asteroid base into a luxurious space resort. Pilots had to deliver hot tubs, Motrona experience jelly, and alcohol to Elephant's Trunk Mine and the GM Cephi system. The deadlock was broken thanks to the intense negotiations between the Pilots Federation and Commander Flossie of Hutton Orbital. The turning point? A historic meeting where Flossie reportedly used her infamous pan, used her infamous pan to knock some sense into the heads of the Federation's top brass. The details are sketchy, but sources say the sound of a pan echoing through the negotiation chamber was the catalyst for peace. With the strike over, the Pilots Federation has promised more engaging and diverse community goals. "We're looking at a new era of CGs," said a spokesperson. "From exploring unknown regions of space to collaborative construction projects, and even some non-combat cultural events." Oh, Thargoids. They're bound to be Thargoids. And yes, we're ensuring the creators are well-fed, well-paid, and far away from Flossie's Pan. When we asked her about her role in resolving the strike, Commander Flossie modestly said,
"I just did what any sensible pilot would do when negotiations stall. Bring out the kitchenware. Now let's get back to trucking." Week 76 of Too Hot, Too Messy saw commanders pass the 117,000 mark. The Hutton led initiative to bring Hutton rares to every station in the known universe tunnels on and on. Numbers are holding steady since Christmas, just under 1,000 last week, so you don't need to be a mathematician to know that the 4-week average is also just about 1,000. A couple of new names can be seen in the live deliveries. I wonder how long they'll stick around once they realise they haven't given away a Hutton mug for 10 deliveries for a couple of months. The recent expansion is over and so current gin production is no longer at 21 units. It's very quiet traffic-wise at Hutton. Commanders should find the approaches free of congestion and landing pad availability is good, occasionally very good. Rumour has it you may even be able to get a seat in the pub when you arrive, especially if you come straight from your ship without changing out of your flight suit, even though the sign at the door says no dirty boots or overalls. Light traffic only this week. Bird Hawes did 2 runs, the best was 1 hour 23 minutes 52 seconds, and Norbert Pontenord 1 hour 24 minutes 48 seconds.
One of the galaxy's most respected engineers, Felicity Farseer of Farseer Incorporated's facility, faced a flummoxing fumble in her frameshift forte. Farseer, famed for finessing starships to flit farther than formally feasible, found herself in a fix when a finicky frameshift fiddle on her own frigate floundered fantastically. The freakish fluke forced Farseer's freighter to flicker and flutter across the firmament. Flitting fleetingly from one far-flung fragment of space to another every 5 fleeting minutes. Flabbergasted onlookers fumbled for their scanners as the ship flickered into frenetic space races, floated through the fabulous rings of Saturn, and even flounced uninvited to a fervent and formal fracas between the Mad Monks of Van Manen and the Splinter Sect, the Sublime Order of Van Manen. Seriously, such splitters. Normally, paradigm of precision and peerless proficiency, Farseer faced a flustering phenomenon as her ship phantasmally phased in and out of physical space. Each ephemeral emergence was echoed by embarrassed exclamations and earnest entreaties emanating from Farseer, fervently fixing the fluctuating fiasco. While a vexing vicissitude for Farseer, this fantastic frameship flub was furnished a fountain of fun for fellow flyers. A frolicsome faction of flighty pilots formed a frivolous forecast fellowship, wagering wittily on where the wayward warp would whisk the wandering woman next. Whimsical whispers wove wild, waggish and whopping tales of the ship's surprise snapshots at stellar soirees and celestial ceremonies. Spirited speculation suggests the snafu stems from secretive strides in spaceflight science, with whispers winding about a wondrous yet wayward propulsion project under Farseer's supervision. Some suggest the entire escapade was an engineered enigma, expertly executed to elude inquisitive interlopers. Facing the Federation, Felicity Farseer furnished a forthright and friendly foreword, affirming that the anomaly would be addressed anon. In her hallmark humorous hue, she heralded, "As an engineer, I'm avid about advancing the art of astronautics. Alas, occasionally these advances assert their own agenda." Jesus, you let him back into the writer's room, didn't you? You promised me he'd been fired. Right, rotten rotters, the lot of you.
Things are going through somewhat of a... Oh, for Alvin's sake, is it still only the middle of January? 5 in Hutton Space this week. Four Systems are on Alvin's report, and for the first time in a while, they're all up in the 30s. One system is on the blink, and one of our wolves is thirsty. More on those stories coming up. Ross 671 continues to see off all comers in its defence of the wooden spoon, putting in a solidly poor performance, but climbing 4 points to 30. The other factions are still snapping at our heels, but for the first time in some weeks, a 10-point gap has opened up to second place. A quarter of influence is locked up in an election to decide third place, so come back after the weekend before trying to boost Hutton. You recall that we hadn't heard much from Barnard Star for a while, and then, 2 weeks ago, it dropped 10 points. In those 2 weeks, it's dropped a further 5 points, coming to a rest half a point above Ross 671 on 31, about which the Hutton population is elated. However, amongst the also-rans are four factions in famine, three civil unrest, two blights, an impressive bust, and a civil war in a pear tree. Gaining a couple of points is hard to move Epsilon Indy, still suffering somewhat from the after-effect of long mods, ending the week on 35. A lack of adverse states leave all influence on the table, so head over there to widen the gap in Alvin's most popular system. Narnia is standing on the edge of Alvin's report with half a toe over the line on 39.7. Systems on the blink. Systems are on the blink in Y0855-0714, so it is time to make a disgraceful profit by shipping in water purifiers and power generators to the medium pads on Yamazaki Landing. A drought has occurred in Wolf 562, so ship in water to the large pads at Berners-Lee or Hopkins Port. At the overachieving end of the Hutton Systems table, we have just four of our systems above 60%. We expanded into the Ross 47 system, which is controlled by the Earth Defence Fleet, so remember to take your litter home with you and to keep your feet off the seats. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, boost Epsilon Indy, clear the infrastructure failure in WISE 0855-0714, and ease the drought in Wolf 562.